Solving Sacramento.
I think it's easy to look at the idea of college and adopt a misconception that once you're in, it's smooth sailing. Oh, you'll be all set. You've got every opportunity in front of you as long as you work hard and study and apply yourself. Well, not always the case, especially when getting in the first place has huge hurdles, even for people who can afford a higher education. This week, leaders of higher ed institutions in the Sacramento area help to focus in on what their educational institutions are doing to combat those kinds of misconceptions. We'll hear about the systems that are in play that increase the barriers, especially for Black and Brown students, the pandemic pivots that both Sacramento State and Sac City College each had to make to serve their student populations, and what both Sac State and Sac City College presidents are doing to walk the walk when it comes to serving their traditionally underserved students. From Solving Sacramento, this is Equity in the Capital. I'm Nick Bruner. Our guest today?
Albert Garcia. I'm the president at Sacramento City College. I've been here at the college since 1991.
My name is Luke Wood, serving as president of California State University Sacramento, Sac State. I've been here for 8 or 9 months, coming back to Sacramento after having been a student here for my undergraduate and for my master's.
Luke and Albert recorded their conversation over Zoom.
I guess my lens is particularly through community college education, given that that's been the bulk of my career, particularly through an instructional lens. So I came in to the community colleges teaching English in particular. As I think about our work in equity at the college, I think about not only what we're doing currently, but I kind of look back also at, you know, sort of how equity work has evolved in our community colleges, and particularly at Sacramento City College, and even to the point where I think about like how I taught in the classroom and what I could have done differently and better, right, to serve, you know, particularly our Black and Brown students who our data tells us we should be serving better.
And for me, I mean, when I think of equity, the first thing that comes to mind is the work of Estella Ben-Simone, who is a retired professor at USC, and she ran the Center for Urban Education there. And what she says is that essentially equity is this heightened focus on groups that experience disproportionate impact. And the focus is for us to remediate difficulties in their experiences because there are outcome differences. And so the idea that she talks about, she juxtaposes between having a deficit mindset versus an equity mindset. A deficit mindset sees certain student groups, our students of color, our lower income students. And when they see them, if there's a breakdown of performance, if they have graduation rates that are lower than that of their peers, a deficit mindset blames students and says, what's wrong with them? What are they doing or not doing that's resulting in the outcome experiences that they have? They're lazy. They don't care. They're not really here for school. They're only here for financial aid. And that has kind of been the predominant way in which people have thought about equity in schools versus the other side of it, which is an equity perspective, is you say, you know, what are we doing or not doing as an institution that's resulting in the outcome experiences that we see? And so it's not focused on the student. It's focused on the educators and institutions that serve them. But then she goes further. And she talks about a concept that's called equity-mindedness. And so, again, if equity is this heightened focus on these groups, equity-mindedness is how do we change the ways in which we think about the work that we do so that we can have that heightened focus? And she says that it comes down to four different things. The first thing is to recognize that there are systemic barriers that are in place that are in a range of social institutions and contexts, education, employment, healthcare, the criminal justice system, and recognizing that in each of these systems, an outcome disparity in one system only serves to amplify outcome disparities in another system. So as an example, let's say that you are either unemployed or underemployed. That's employment as one system. That doesn't just affect employment, that affects other systems. For example, it can affect healthcare, your access to high quality, affordable, and effective healthcare. Another one that we talk about a lot in our field is the focus on what the relationship between education and the criminal justice system, which many people refer to as the school to prison pipeline, which suggests that overrepresentation in K-12 education in exclusionary discipline, suspensions, and expulsions, and overexposure to into special education because of perceptions that students, there must be something wrong with them, that you put those two things together, they serve as the pillars of that school to prison pipeline, first through overrepresentation in the juvenile court system and then eventually in the criminal justice system. And then she goes back to that those framing things I was talking about earlier. Her second and third points are that you have to focus on the institution itself. What is wrong with what we're doing as educators rather than blaming students? And then the fourth point that she has is that we then have to be reflective on our roles, recognizing that we don't get to separate ourselves. Like, I don't get to separate myself from Sacramento State. I work at Sacramento State. I don't get to say, well, hey, look at what that campus did historically. Look at what's happening here and blame other people. I have to take responsibility and look at what I'm doing or not doing to produce those outcome disparities, because they're happening within the organization that I work with. So it's taking that ownership, that institutional responsibility to create the kind of experience that our students deserve.
So much of what you just talked about there, Luke, resonates, and particularly because I've been in the system for so long. I remember when I was teaching, the chat in the department workroom would be, well, we could do so much better if the students only came to us prepared, right? You know, and if the high schools only did their jobs, it was always a blame game that students weren't really ready, rather than focusing on what we could be doing in the classroom to help those students who needed it the most. And I remember reading your study also on as a local study, right, on the schools around here about suspension and expulsion rates for students of color, and how those impact those students not only at the time, but in their trajectory as potential students or also potentially into the criminal justice system as well. And that just really struck me. I remember reading that. It's like, oh, my gosh. You know, that's, we're not giving certain students, particularly Black students in Sacramento, a chance, right? If that's what's happening.
And I think that's a really important point, and why our respective positions with Sacramento City and Sacramento State is so important, because we're in a community that is highly diverse. And we're also in a community where, for our Black students, they're more likely than most other places in the state of California to be exposed to suspensions and expulsions. And so if you think about a group of students who've been systematically excluded from opportunity and told indirectly that you don't belong here, you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, that you're dangerous, you're deviant, you're up to no good. And then these are the students that we're getting, and we're trying to provide them with the resources and support that they need. But we're also doing so recognizing that there are issues that have taken place prior that can impact their trust in school, that can impact their sense of belonging in that environment. And then, of course, all of that is further complicated by the pandemic, right? And which has directly created equity issues. I know at many institutions, you saw big drops in enrollment for Black students, Latinx students, Native American students, Southeast Asian students, Hmong, Cambodian, Laotian, Vietnamese. You also saw greater issues around stress, anxiety, depression. And we see that here, even at Sacramento State. You know, we're doing way more around mental health support services for our students, around basic needs, because the student that we have today is not the same student that we had before the pandemic. It is a different student. They face different issues. And a lot of it is what happened during that pandemic. But mental health is a real conversation at all times. And we have to think about this as, these are groups that have been more likely to have been exposed to trauma. That's from like stressful life events that have occurred, right? Loss of life and family and those things. But then it's also the same groups that have been exposed to racialized trauma. And if I think about the work of William Smith from the University of Utah on what's called racial battle fatigue. And basically what he's been able to show is that when you're in an environment where there is a persistent strain around race and racism, persistent stress around race and racism, he says that it impacts you in three different ways. First, cognitively, your ability to process information, retain information, your attentional control. Second, it impacts you psychologically, constant anxiety and worrying, anger suppression, resentment. But then he also says that it impacts you physically, tension, headaches, a backache, elevated heartbeats, an upset stomach, inability to be able to sleep at night. And so you got to recognize that when we're working with our students, both with these racialized notions of what's taking place as it relates to equity, and then, of course, coming out of the pandemic, that they're fighting challenges on three different fronts, cognitively, psychologically, and physiologically, while they're just trying to move through an institution like our respective institutions to create a better life for themselves and for their families.
During the pandemic, we took most of our classes online, almost all of our classes online, except for the classes that had to be taught on ground. Nursing, for instance. But for students who don't have a computer or who only have a cell phone or who don't have reliable internet access, right? All of those kinds of things impacted sometimes who could take classes with us. I'm sure we lost students because of that. And in other cases, we had students signing up, trying to do their entire class on their phone. We made great efforts to try to get everybody set up okay. You know, so we had Chromebook and laptop giveaways and hotspot handouts and that kind of thing. All really good efforts by the college and the district to give students an opportunity. But then again, if you're taking classes online, not all of our students have a good, you know, environment in which to take a class at home. So even if they have the equipment, they may not have the atmosphere that's really conducive to learning, and they really rely on getting to the campus. So that was an impact during the pandemic, but I think we see the sort of lagging effects of that even now.
The pandemic has definitely shaped, you know, how we serve students. The focus on equity has as well. I would also say that at Sacramento State, you know, we learn a lot from our community college partners. And I would say that I'm pretty proud of the California Community College system and particularly proud of Sacramento City College. You know, I used to work at Sac City, so I have a lot of love for the institution. But you all in the community college space are leading the way when it comes to equity work. There's no question that the conversation on equity in the community colleges in California is 10, 20 years beyond where we're at with many of our other institutions, not all, but many others. And so what are some of the ways in which you're advancing equity in terms of the programs that you're doing? I know, you know, all the different services that you all have created. What are some of the things that you want to highlight?
I appreciate the kudos, by the way. And it feels good. I mean, it feels as if we are doing good work in the sphere of equity. However, it also feels like we have a long way to go.
That's a good mindset.
Yeah. Well, we need to be there. A few things that we're doing that I think are really helpful. We know, for instance, that hiring and hiring new faculty and staff with an equity mindset is really important. So when we hire new faculty, for instance, we give them one class of release time in their first semester with us in order to go through what we call the new faculty academy. Okay. And that academy teaches them sort of everything about the institution, but it's all through an equity lens, and that your job here at the college is to work with students through an equity lens. That's in the classroom, out of the classroom, everywhere. For faculty who have been here, who have already been hired and who have been here for a while, we have a Teachers for Equity T4E, if you will, program, so that current instructors can learn more about equitable practices in their teaching. You know, I think we have great programming in terms of helping students belong on campus. You know, for our Latino and Latina students, we have our Puente program and a Rasa Center. For our Black and African American students, we have an Ashe Center. We have an Asian Pacific Islander Center. All with the goal of helping our students feel at home on campus and feel as if this college place is really for them. And I feel like we are doing really good work in those areas. We know that the data shows that we still have improvement to make in terms of disproportionate impacts on particularly our Black and Brown students. So we are really focused on that.
And we are too. You know, we are doing in similar ways, cultural centers, academic resource centers that are focused on populations. We have our Black Resource Center, MLK Center. We have our Cerner Center, which is our Latinx Resource Center, our Dreamer Center. We just opened up a SWANA Center for Southwest Asian, North African students. We have a Jewish Life Center. So here's why that matters. We are a Hispanic serving institution. An HSI, a federal designation, that means that we have at least 25% of our students who are Latinx. Here at Sacramento State, it's actually 37%. So we're a super HSI. In addition, we're also an ANAPESI, which is an Asian American, Native American, Pacific Islander serving institution, which means that at least 10% of our students are Asian or Pacific Islander. 22% of our students are actually API. And many of them are Filipino or Southeast Asian, so Hmong, Cambodian, Laotian, Vietnamese. And so we serve a beautiful tapestry of diversity. But we're also the number one institution in the California State University system that enrolls and serves Black and African American students. No one in the Cal State serves more Black students out of all 23 campuses. No one serves more Black students than we do. And we're proud of that. And we've been recognized by the city of Sacramento, the county of Sacramento, and most recently by the California Legislative Assembly as being a Black serving institution, which is essentially a state recognition for our desire to support Black and African American students. So when you have these different designations, one of the things that you don't want to do is just be an HSI or an ANAPESI or a Black serving institution, a BSI, and then not actually be doing things to serve those populations. So we're very passionate about walking the walk. Otherwise, we serve as a false promise to those communities. So we're doing right now a cluster hire. We're doing 25 faculty lines with a focus on educators for teaching and serving Latinx students. So it's a Latinx themed cluster hire for those faculty members who are becoming into our organization, who have a history of working with our Latinx community. We've started the Black Honors College, which is the first in the country, an honors college that's specifically designed to serve Black and African American students. They have over 6,000 square feet of space on campus at the heart of the campus in our library, which is the pinnacle of learning and excellence, where they have their own seminar room, own office suite. They have their own student center. We've reassigned 8 staff members who basically are leading this effort, a dean of students, a director, their own counselors, their own academic advisors, their own outreach team, office support. And then we've got 17 faculty members on assigned time who have been handpicked based upon a demonstrated record of success in teaching and serving Black students. So those are just a few really quick things about a lot of things that we're doing. But I would say that, you know, when you work in an institution that's as diverse as Sac State or Sac City, you wake up in the morning saying, what am I doing for X community, whatever that community might be, because it's important to you to make sure that your students don't feel like they're a guest in someone else's house. You want them to feel at home.
Coming up, more from the corner offices of local higher ed in Sacramento. That after the break, as Equity in the Capital continues.
Support comes from Univision 19 Sacramento, which serves the local Spanish-speaking community and is a member of the Solving Sacramento Journalism Collaborative.
As leaders at the college, or really as any kind of employee at the college, you really have to walk the walk. You know, this equity work can't be like an additional program that you're doing. It really has to just be the work that you're doing every day. And so when you get up in the morning, you are asking yourselves, you know, what do I do to help this particular population? And It's really a good way of looking at it. And I think more and more Sac City and Sac State both are making it the normal part of what we do, right? Not the additional extra work, you know, that we think we ought to do, that kind of thing. Yes, we think we ought to do it, and we need to do it all the time.
100%. But as you know, there's also challenges to getting the work done. There's some limitations around the solutions, right? We do face, you know, it's not uncommon for some of the educators that we work with, not all, but some of them, to have those deficit perspectives. It's not uncommon to have challenges in the fact that we're in, you know, bureaucratic organizations that are trying to operate for the public good while at the same time adhering to significant state policies that go along with that, that can sometimes complicate our efforts. We're in institutions that were historically founded to serve demographics that are very different from what we currently serve. And so we have to continue to readjust and reform and refine the work that we're doing in order to be able to do that. And then, you know, so we have a lot of, I would say, limitations and challenges around this work that we have to think through. We're also in a budget crunch, right, at the state level. The state has come back in, you know, billions of dollars in deficit. And then, of course, that has an impact on us and how we operate at the daily level. But even with those challenges, I see more opportunities. Even with those challenges, I see more educators who each and every day are committed to serving our students of color. And for me, I think it's the best possible time to be at a place like Sac City or Sacramento State, because we can really do some really good work that can truly transform lives and create that upward socioeconomic mobility for our students.
You talked about a deficit perspective. And I think again, I think a lot about instruction because that's where I came from, right? I came from the classroom. I think a lot of times faculty may know about equity and know about what's right in terms of serving our students, all our populations of students, but they may be kind of stuck in an equality perspective, meaning that the thought that if students come in the door, if I treat them the same as everybody else, then I'm doing my job, right? I treat everybody the same. I give everybody the same chance, then I'm doing my job. Well, you know, sort of a basic tenet of looking at equity and equity practices is that it's different from equality. And so I think we still have that bridge to get over, that some students are going to need more help, more assistance, more support. And that's great. That's our job. Right. To do that. So I think I think it takes time to overcome that. But it's one of the things that we need to be looking at. But I sort of took the buzz off your positive message there at the end, Luke.
No, that's just being real. I mean, the work is hard. Right. And that's why you got to continue to wake up in the morning with why are you doing what you're doing? Right. What is it that's personally driving you to keep this work going? And for me personally, you know, I'm a Black male. I'm a former foster child. I struggle with food and housing insecurities when I was in college. And I want to make sure that my students have the experience that I feel like I didn't. And that doesn't mean that my experience was all bad, because it wasn't. But there were certainly times when I needed support and it wasn't there. I mean, when I was in college, I go 2 or 3 days at a time without eating. And so you can get validation from your faculty, but if you're hungry, it's hard to focus in class, right? And so it's about waking up every day to try to make sure that the students are getting what they deserve, because these are students who too often they've been given false promises from people who don't believe in them, who don't think that they're capable. And we have to create an environment that instead extols their brilliance, their dignity, and their morality. And that takes looking introspectively at your own experience and using that as a source of fuel and motivation to do the good work.
Yeah, completely agree. And it's really, you know, an honor to be working at a community college such as Sacramento City College, and actually in partnership with Sac State, too. I think we create sort of a higher ed ecosystem here that, you know, is really working on providing all those supports for students.
I would say this, that, and again, there's a lot of this comes from like personal motivation. If you're from a minoritized community or you have close proximity to it and you're wanting to see a better experience for your students, you traverse as a student of color, you traverse very difficult challenges, encounters, and experiences on a college campus, no matter what. And what I tell folks, whether they're going into leadership or it's a student who's looking for what they want to do in their future, it's this, is that you, in terms of how you treat those experiences, you have to embrace them. You have to embrace the good experiences, and I would argue even more so the challenging ones, because they perfectly prepare you for the next step in your journey and your purpose in your role. I don't think that if, from my background, if I hadn't had the background that I have, I don't think I could be as effective in doing this work. And it, so personal experience does truly matter. I think that they have to embrace those good and bad experiences.
I would also say for someone who's thinking about higher education, hey, California community colleges are for you. You may not, it may not feel that way to you before you come to us. It may not even feel that way to you when you're here with us all the time, right? But that really is why we're here. Sacramento City College is here to help all students. And regardless of the experiences you've had in high school, regardless of your ethnic background or whatever background you happen to have, we have a lot of adult students over the age of 25 coming to us. And that's a thing too, right? We really want to welcome them and for them to feel like, you know, they're not going to be out of place right here. In fact, you know, more of our students are adult students than coming traditionally out of high school. So, you know, we do want to be that for all of our students.
If I were to close out, I'd like to give one word of advice for any potential prospective student who might be listening to this. Go to Sacramento City College, and when you're done, transfer on over to Sacramento State.
Fantastic message. Thank you, Luke.
More local and regional news stories and current events are online at solvingsacramento.org. If you enjoyed this conversation today, I encourage you to check out a very interesting account around a local visual arts institution at the website. That and more stories affecting the region, solvingsacramento.org, where along with our journalism partners, you play a crucial role in bringing everybody in this region stories that matter. Make a monthly contribution to Solving Sacramento, something you otherwise wouldn't miss each month, by hitting the donate button at solvingsacramento.org, and thank you. Our project manager is Sina Christian, our project editor is Kat Graziosi, and our theme music for this series is composed and performed by Lillian Francis. I'm Nick Bruner. Stay subscribed for more from Solving Sacramento. And thanks for listening.
This podcast is supported by funding from the Solutions Journalism Network.